Well, I started in Pecatonica High School, Pecatonica, Illinois, 61063. Still remember the zip code, with really excellent band director and a really excellent choral director. My grandmother had taught me piano sort of informally as a kid. And then I took music lessons at Jackson Piano, which is, used to be right next to the Coronado Theater. I now see that it's not. And then later took at Rock Valley College from Reuben Johnson, who was a wonderful piano teacher when I was in high school. Then went to the University of Illinois, where I started a fledgling music educator. That's what I thought I wanted to be. I wanted to change lives like my band director and my choral director changed my life. And partway through that study at the University of Illinois, when I got to lesson plans class, I realized we were going to spend the entire semester doing lesson plans, and I just couldn't picture doing it. I said, that's not for me. This isn't what I thought music education was. And so I transferred into applied piano and had the greatest teacher, Kenneth Drake, who lives in Baileyville, Illinois to this day. I believe he's retired, and that's where he lives, not far from Pecatonica. I got my bachelor's degree in applied piano performance, and I rolled right into a wonderful program in graduate school. Now they would call it collaborative piano. Back then it was accompanying vocal coaching is what the degree is, with just a fantastic professor named John Woostman, who still lives in Champaign-Urbana, who between he and Kenneth Drake changed my life musically. They just were opened my eyes and ears to so much, and I thank them to this very day as I hold my high school music directors. I'm very lucky to have had them. The inspiration that those four people provided, I think, instilled in me a sense of momentum of going forward. So I was in graduate school, finishing my second year. I had won this great fellowship, which paid me to go to school. I couldn't even believe it. I was being paid to go to school, and I had one semester of Italian left because I did most of my coursework the first year, including my graduate recital. So I just was there the second year because I had the fellowship, finishing Italian, and I was in the right place at the right time. I fell into a job. I was visiting a friend, a very famous friend now, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio from Chicago, who went to the University of Illinois. She was in a production of Camelot at the Marriott Lincolnshire Theater. And I was in the audience, and they were doing a post-performance cabaret. And after the cabaret, they had announced it, and the people were on the way to the main brace, the bar at the Marriott at the time. And they didn't have anybody play, so they were going to cancel the cabaret. My friend Mary Elizabeth said, well, I have a friend here who plays the piano. And they went, oh yeah, sure, your friend plays the piano. And she goes, no, he does. And so they showed me the music, and I said, I'll give it a shot. I'll play it. And I did, and I sight read it, and it was okay. It wasn't fantastic. Today I'd probably say it was not even okay. But at the time it must have been pretty good, because the producer of the theater and the artistic director were both there that night. And they heard it. And they sat me down and bought me a drink. Mind you, I was still finishing this fellowship at the U of I. And talked to me about the business and what I wanted to do and everything. And I still wanted, at that time, I wanted to be the great classical accompanist like John Woostman was. About 2 weeks later, I was back doing my Italian in Champaign-Urbana. I got a phone call from that theater offering me a full-time job. And it was that easy. Easy is not the word, because I was horrified. I thought, I have to finish my degree. I have one semester of Italian left. And John Woostman, I went in to talk to him. He is the one responsible for me getting that fellowship. And he said, get out of here. Take the job. Is it paying money? I said, yeah, it pays money. It's 52 weeks a year. He went, done. Resign your fellowship and take the job. I said, what about my degree? My parents, back in Pecatonica, Illinois, the master's degree meant a lot to them. And he said, finish at correspondence. And so I did. And the Marriott Lincolnshire taught me a great deal. I moved to Chicago, had a couple kids, and I became the resident music director at this Marriott Lincolnshire Theater, of which evolved into doing at least 5 major musicals a year and doing some theater for young audience shows in the daytime. So in a matter of a few years, I knocked off maybe, I think before I left there, I'd done about 65 different titles. Yeah. And good work with good directors who pushed for different arrangements, pushed for stuff I had no idea how to do, and I just had to do it. you know, you're young, you just don't even think about it. You just do it. Now I would never, and I think I can't, and I'd worry myself into stupor. So I became sort of a Chicago music director, lived on the North Shore, and eventually started to get a little itchy. There was only so much you could do. I had done so many shows at the Marriott. I was fortunate enough to have worked at the Goodman a couple times. A beautiful production of Sunday in the Park with George is one that really I'll never forget. But they started to mount national tours. It was back when Cameron McIntosh's shows, The Giants, Phantom, Les Mis, Miss Saigon, were just breaking the face of musical theater. And they started to mount Chicago companies. They would save on per diem. They could hire local actors. If the actor auditioned in Chicago, they didn't have to pay per diem, all of that. It was more cost effective. And I happened to be a Chicago known music director. They wouldn't have to pay me per diem. So I started out I got a job as the associate music director for the first national company of Phantom. And I did that in Chicago and then toured with it for a number of years. I think three total I was with that show. And then back to Chicago for a little bit. Then was it because I was in that, quote, organization, end quote, I was able to roll into the first national tour of Les Mis, where I started as the associate conductor and toured for 3 years of my life. And then it was time for Miss Saigon, and I had graduated, and they gave me the music director job. And it was 9 months in Chicago and then 3 years on the road. And that was really wonderful. It's one of the best times of my life. It was really great. But with that came getting to know Claude Michel Schoenberg, Alain Boublil, them liking my work, I was so fortunate enough to work with them on both of their two giant shows. And I think it must have been about 1994 by now. Of course, I was three when all of this started. But I got a phone call from David Caddick, the music supervisor of Miss Saigon, and said, we need a conductor, music director, to go into Sunset Boulevard on Broadway when Betty Buckley goes into the show. And I think you have the temperament to do it. Would you consider moving to Broadway with a show? I stupidly, I said, well, let me think about it for like a day. And then realized, are you kidding me? Moving to New York and having a show that's already run for a year on Broadway with Glenn Close. It won Best Musical that year. Glenn had won the Tony, I believe. And yes, I'm happy to do that. So I moved to New York with a job, which not very many people get to do. Yeah. And I am thankful to this day to David Caddick for what he did. Bob Billig was the associate music supervisor. They blessed all of that. And then in New York, again, it was sort of a 42nd Street sort of thing. The very famous now composer Jeanine Tesori, whose work is so fantastic, Fun Home, Carolina Change, Shrek, Violet, you know, was the music director of a new musical called Titanic. What a preposterous idea. Jeanine had to resign, and she, because Violet, her first show, was being picked up, and she knew that she couldn't music direct this giant new musical, appropriately named Titanic. And so Maury Yeston, the composer, was looking for a new composer. I was a new kid in town. Apparently word was not unfavorable. And Maury interviewed me, called me on the phone and said, I hear you're good. Do you want to come over and talk about the show? In the meantime, and this all does circle back, Phil, to the Marriott Lincolnshire, where I first started out of the University of Illinois. The Marriott Lincolnshire had done a show of Maury's called In the Beginning, I think it was called then. It's had several different titles. I didn't do that show there, but he knew of my reputation at the Marriott Lincolnshire. I think I even met him when I went and saw it. He might have been in for previews or something. I seem to remember meeting him, but I didn't work with him. But because Kerry Walker, who used to produce at the Marriott, and again, I hold him responsible for a lot of my career, almost all of it, by taking that first chance and hiring me. Kerry Walker gave me a recommendation to Maury Yeston and said, you don't know this guy, kid at the time, not even 30 yet, I don't think. he goes, if you were smart, you'd hire him. So I went to Maury's apartment, looked at the one Tony he already had that was on the table, and he played the Titanic score for me. And at the end of it, he said, I don't see any reason you shouldn't do this. So I finished my year with Betty Buckley. I put Elaine Page into Sunset Boulevard, her American debut. And then I left and did Titanic, which had a tumultuous, everybody wanted us to fail. There were three shows that opened within 3 weeks of each other. There was Steel Pure by Kander and Ebb, which everybody thought was going to be a giant hit. The Life by Cy Coleman. Both of these were good shows, by the way, which was going to be perceived as the one to beat. And then Us. They sink, they dance, they drown. I mean, there was so many bad things said about it. And our preview period was horrible. Parts of scenery didn't work. And then magically, it sort of all came together. And we won 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Best Score, Best Book. It was a pretty triumphant. It was against all adversity. And that's how I got to Broadway. That's a very long answer to my timeline. And then I've been fortunate enough to be part of, in one way or another, either as an arranger, a music supervisor, conductor. I'd call it 13 Broadway shows. The last one being a really great revival of Cy Coleman's On the 20th Century, starring Miss Kristen Chenoweth, which brings me in this room with you right now, that the Roundabout Theater produced, directed by Scott Ellis, and it was fantastic. Warren Carlyle staged it and choreographed it, and it was a really great revival. And that was a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And in the meantime, you know, if you know, the surface, to be brutally honest, the texture of musicals has changed since I first moved to New York. I mean, that was 1995. You know, then came Spring Awakening, then came Rent, not in that order. Pop musicals became more pop-oriented and stuff. And so, to be honest, the perception of people is that, well, Kevin's not the young kid in town anymore. I mean, he's an older guy. So, you know, it's interesting when the phone calls that used to immediately come don't always come, to be brutally honest. But what I did learn is that then you have to reinvent. You have to keep all your old skills, your conducting skills. And at the same time, along the way, you do these great shows with great stars. And if you do good work, and if they do concerts, then they may tap you to do some concert work. I've been very, very fortunate enough that Kristen, her regular music director, Mary Mitchell Campbell, who's so sought after and very busy, if Mary Mitchell is not available, there will be time she'll reach out to me. And it was such great timing that she happened to reach out to me for this weekend, which would include Rockford, Illinois, in a theater that is attached to the store I took my first professional music lessons.
It's just a small world, isn't it?
It's
how
bizarre.
Our lives circle back around.
Yeah, it's all full circle. And I, as a kid, the great choral director we had, his name was Douglas Becknell. He somehow, those of us who were really interested in music, got us involved with the Rockford Symphony Chorus to sing extra if they needed a mass choir. And I remember the last time, maybe the only time I've heard the Rockford Symphony, other than in about an hour, I sang a Scriabin piece in a mass choir. It was a tone poem. I can't remember what the name was. Doesn't really matter. And that is the one and only time I was on the Coronado stage singing with the Rockford Symphony. And I got to play the pipe organ as a kid.
Oh, you did?
Yes. I got to go play that pipe organ because it had been restored. The theater had not been, but the organ did. But driving here today, first of all, like, where the hell am I? A lot of it I didn't recognize. And what struck me is driving up to the Coronado, I remember that sign as being huge. It looked like so tall and it was brown. And I thought, that's it? But I was a kid.
Yeah.
It all looked, everything.
It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Sure.
Yeah.
I tell you what, though, at nighttime when it's dark and that marquee is lit up, there's nothing like it.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see it.
You're going to love it. It's going to bring back all those feelings. I'm certain of it. You mentioned a number of people along the way that really helped you and really inspired you. And Kristen mentioned when she did our interview, she said there must be something in the water down there. because of a list of top-notch talent that has come from, let's call it Northern Illinois. What was in the water for you? What was it that kind of, it might be tough because you mentioned so many people.
But right. No, I can specify it down a little further. The choral director at my school, Douglas Becknell, who I just mentioned, had a connection with, there was a singing men's chorus in Rockford, and Reuben Johnson, who I mentioned was my first professional piano teacher, worked at Rock Valley College. And Rock Valley College also had Starlight Theater. I think it still does. Mm-hmm. Because of my taking lessons with Reuben, junior and senior years of high school, maybe it was even sophomore, I don't really quite remember, I became aware of Starlight Theater, went to see a couple shows, and then auditioned. You know, I ended up playing the piano for one of them, but then I auditioned. I sang and danced. Not well. Not well. I thought maybe I wanted to do that, and then I realized I was actually not good. But I certainly could do it at a community theater level. And in that same community theater were Marin Mazzi. I worked with Joe Mantello, Dan Webster, who was a very famous film art director, became a very close friend of mine. And of course, Bob Greenblatt, the area's biggest success story, who is now the president of entertainment at NBC Universal. You know, when I got married, Dan and Bob were both groom or ushers in my wedding. So we all sort of worked together. Sharon Sachs is from here. But I think it was that community theater, Starlight Theater, that got me involved with them and sort of got me out of the Pecatonica summers. Not that that's a bad thing, but I mean, got me, you know, gave me a little more exposure to things that could go beyond your high school musical. Now, those kids mostly went to Boylan Central Catholic High School, and they worked with Ted Bacino, who was the teacher at the time, and he was also the director at Starlight Theater. So there is a common bond among them. They all went to, most of the swanky kids went to Boylan and had the had Ted Bacino as their director. But it was the Rock Valley Starlight that sort of brought us all together for just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Linda Wallum, my God, she's, you know, Nurse Jackie, I think she created that. And her brother Steve is a famous actor. There's a lot of people. But it's different, Phil. Even at Pecatonica High School, with the good teachers I had, we did a musical and a play or two a year. And there were 65 people in the choir, and there were 70 kids in the band. At Little Pecatonica High School, that's not the case now. And it's a little sad. I am a little sad about that. And I think arts in the public schools, unfortunately, maybe have taken a little bit of a hit in the state of Illinois, I'm guessing.
Right, yeah. I know funding for the arts.
Yeah, it's just not so good.
Kind of stuff. Yep.
And that makes me a little sad because, again, those early influences, that choral director, and by God, my band director, Daryl Bartel, who still lives in Love Park, is coming to the concert tonight.
Nice.
And he reminded me when I called him and offered him tickets. I said, there's nobody I'd rather have at the concert. And he went, Stites, do you remember that time you first conducted? I went, actually, I don't. He said, you did the Star Spangled Banner at a basketball game because all of the cornets were on teams and we didn't have anybody to play trumpet or cornet and play the melody. So he did, meaning there was no conductor. So he made me get up and conduct. And then the more he started talking, the more I sort of remember it. And he said, apparently I said to him, Mr. Bartel, what do I do at the end when the song stops? Land of the free, what do I do? And he was like, you stop conducting. And I said, well, what do I do when you start again? He goes, you start conducting again. Just go do it. I finally, it brings tears to my eyes right now a little bit. I now remember that. I'm not imagining I remember it. I really do remember it. And he's going to watch the show tonight.
Oh, how brilliant. That is just brilliant. I hope you have a little time to spend with him.
Shake his hand and thank him.
That would be great. Yeah, somebody mentioned to me early in my theater days to be careful of how you treat people on your way up because you're going to meet the same people on the way down. That was a very simple thing, and truer words were never spoken because as a young kid, you have no idea, like you and me sitting here now, how life circles back around.
Exactly.
And how many different lives you touch or touch you in that wonderful pathway that we call showbiz. But sure enough, it all comes back around. And when you can have memories like you're having now, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
It is. I wish somebody would have told me that on my early days in New York because a lot of really good happened to me very fast. And I will say now that I have turned a ripe old age this fall of 60 years old, I wish I would have been a little cocky as a kid, as a younger person in this business. I could have burned some bridges a little bit. You know, I don't know if kids listen to this sort of broadcast, but boy, that is one thing that I wish I would have paid a little more attention to. And if I could tell anybody anything, you know, it's really, don't ever burn a bridge. Don't ever get cocky. Don't ever take anything for granted. Because mm-hmm. it's not always going to be there. Yeah. Yeah. Like I mentioned, the musicals, the musical face of musicals changed. And a lot of times there's not a show for me. Yeah. Whether or not I think I can do it or not, doesn't matter. The people that are hiring the shows, well, Stites, he just does those legit shows. He can't do a pop show. Well, of course I could. Of course. Maybe not as good as some people that in their perception, but, mm-hmm. you know, so it's really wise, Phil, that you said that, because nobody sort of is around always to tell you that.
Grateful for people like that in my life. So in your story, you've mentioned a number of different things, and of all the different things that you do, you compose, music director, choral director. My memories of you when we worked together was your, outside of all of your other talents, was your ability to get a chorus to sing, not just together, but to listen together and put consonants on words. And so people, even though we did a lot of theater in the round, so people in the back row could understand what was being sung.
Right.
Whether you were moving or dancing, or as you know, as if the stage was just a flurry, they were still going to hear what they were supposed to hear. And you had a real talent for getting, maybe you were stuck with like 20 dancers who could sing, and then you had singers who couldn't dance, and you know, you just would always have a large group of varied people, and yet you had this ability to really, really make things happen. But of all of those things, composing, directing, do you have a favorite activity?
Sort of just hit it. Yeah. I love teaching and working with choirs, choral stuff. I really, really love that. Always have, because I had good choir experience in high school. Was in wonderful choirs at the University of Illinois. And I do take pride in that. I love to do that. I think I've had such good choral directors to listen to, that it's something that's really entered my bones. It's probably at the top of the list of things, along with conducting. I really do love conducting big groups. You don't get to do that very often. On Broadway now, the biggest orchestra you're maybe going to get is 18, depending on the house you're in now, because the minimums have been lowered. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate enough to work at Radio City Music Hall, and we have 35. So that's great. But, you know, the Rockford Symphony tonight, there'll be 65 people on that stage. And that's really exciting. And that's a thrill. And it's an honor. And you don't, especially because you don't get it that often in theater anymore. You just don't.
Yeah. And they are a talented group.
I'm looking forward to it.
That orchestra is really, really good. Describe yourself as a conductor. There's so many different passions and everything with different conductors. What style of conductor are you?
I'd like to think I'm connected to my body in some way. I like to not flail about too much. If I see a video of myself conducting, I get very self-conscious. I think I'm karate chopping, but I try to be clear. Orchestras see a lot of fruity, circle-y, motion-y sort of things that don't communicate much of anything. And really what they need to be told is, we're going to slow down here, and this is the rate we're going to slow down. And if they're good musicians, they'll make the music happen. So I try to be very, very clear and very precise. And you don't have a lot of time. The larger of group you have, the least amount of time you have, because each person is getting paid the same amount of money. So if you have 65 people, you're going to have less time than you have an orchestra of 12, because the rehearsal budget is going to be gigantic. Because today I will have a 2.5 hour rehearsal, out of which 20 minutes is a break. So I'll have 2 hours and 10 minutes with the orchestra. And I haven't seen Kristen for a year. So I'll have about 40 minutes with her.
Well, obviously, we need to bid you goodbye. But first, I'd like to say welcome home.
Thank you. I can't tell you what it's like to be here. I was so thrilled. My father, God rest his soul, a year ago, clipped out from the Register Star. Was that still the name of the paper, Rock Register? Uh-huh. A clipping that Kristen was coming to town. I thought, that can't be. I can't imagine. And then I checked in with her and her people, and then it just timed out that, in fact, I was able to do the concert here and then one in Minneapolis on Saturday. Sadly, my dad passed away in September, but my mom was going to go, but she's taken very ill, so she's at the hospital now. But she'll be there in spirit tonight. And I do think a small portion of the population of Pecatonic, Illinois, will be in the audience tonight. At least I hope so.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for spending some of your valuable time with us. We appreciate it.
Phil, it's great to see you, and I'm honored to be here.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.